You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking American League East today with MLB.com's five AL East beat reporters. We're talking Hall of Fame, a little hot stove with Ian Brown. We're looking back at some moves earlier in the winter when we talk about the Rays with Bill Chastain. We're talking about what's still left to be done with the Blue Jays, Yankees, and Orioles as they look to reprise their roles at the top of the division. Thanks, everybody, for listening to MLB.com Extras. Talking Baltimore Orioles with MLB.com's Orioles beat reporter, Brittany Giroli. Britt, it's been a pretty quiet offseason for the Orioles, but they continue to be mentioned with and to apparently look into outfielders. It seems like there is still an opening for a corner outfielder. Where does that stand as we speak right now?
There's definitely still an opening. They'd like to add at least one corner outfielder, and I imagine maybe one or two other guys who kind of low-risk guys, not big names, that they could invite to spring training to foster that competition and give them a little depth. But the one you've heard them connected to a whole lot lately is free agent Colby Rasmus, and he's a guy who the Orioles look at similar to Dylan Young, who is expected to have his one-year signing made official today. But he's a guy who they think going into that Orioles clubhouse would be a fit because they have so many good character guys. He did meet with manager Buck Showalter. That meeting went well. Rasmus was reportedly pretty impressed with the Orioles organization and how that's gone. But the Orioles really haven't done much still to replace Nick Markakis and Nelson Cruz. And I know a lot of the talk is the prospect Jeriel Alvarez and how he comes into play here. But the fact of the matter is they want Alvarez to get more seasoning in a perfect world. They don't want to go into spring training relying on him out of opening day. So they do really need to hunker down here over the next few weeks and figure out how they're going to fill that hole. Is it going to be Rasmus? Is it going to be someone else? I would expect that they have at least one more signing before spring training that's a legitimate candidate to be in the outfield.
You mentioned Rasmus, and obviously he's a guy I know a bit, and it seems like a really intriguing fit there. I mean, he's a guy with enormous ability, with really all-star ability, who really played at that level for a good bit of 2013, but as you kind of touched on, is a guy who I think there really needs to be kind of a good personal fit and a good clubhouse fit there. When the organization looks at him, do they think that 2013 and parts of maybe back several years, that kind of real high upside is still in him?
Absolutely. I know he's always been kind of someone who's intrigued Buck Showalter. And, you know, when you mentioned the fact that he has that high upside, he also comes with the issues that people have had about his makeup and things like that. But Buck's always been a guy who's really wanted to give players a second chance. I mentioned Dylan Young is a good example. He was a great team guy in there, and he's had issues in other stops, and obviously a lot of that is self-inflicted, but I think it's a good parallel to draw to Rasmus. The Orioles have really created a really good atmosphere for some of these guys who need a fresh slate, who need to start over. And that's why I think he would be a guy who maybe played to his potential if he was to come to Baltimore.
Now, I don't want to make too much of it, but it just seems like Showalter may be kind of a guy who kind of speaks Colby's language.
Yes, he does. And I think that the way that Showalter's always looked at it really goes back to his dad and his father being the first principal when his Florida school integrated back in high school. He's always been a guy who's kind of gone against the grain, who's taken pride in taking chances on people that everyone else says, you know, this about. Buck's been a guy who wants to give people chances. There were people in the Orioles organization who didn't think Jim Johnson had what it took to be a closer. And Buck put him in that role, and he was very good for 2 years in Baltimore. So Buck's been that guy. He's going to continue to be that guy. And their interest in Rasmus is, one, as you mentioned, his ability and his upside. And two, I think Buck really likes proving people wrong.
What else is out there? Because as we're now into calendar year 2015, the market is dwindling some. There are fewer free agent players out there. Obviously, there's still trade options. But if they wanted to do two moves, or if Rasmus doesn't happen, or just whatever they're trying to accomplish, what other possibilities are out there to sort of fill that outfield and maybe bench spot that they need to fill?
There isn't a whole lot, to be honest with you. And I think if they don't get Rasmus and you know, they don't want to force Alvarez, it's going to take some maneuvering on that roster. I mean, Steve Pierce is the guy who could play outfield and probably would play outfield right now if the season were to start today. So I don't think that's the scenario that they want to envision. And when you look at some of the guys still left, still available, they knew this was how it was going to play out, that you know Cabrera was going to sign, probably not with them. They didn't like the years or the money involved with that. He was the best free agent outfield prospect. And they knew after that, when you look at it, it's really nothing to say, wow. It's not a group that makes you say, all right, these are the pieces that we need. So I think they're going to be very careful if they don't get Rasmus and looking at the talent level and the ability and where some of those free agents that are still out there are in their careers. And they might say, hey, look, can we cover this for a few months while we wait for Alvarez? And I think that might be the route they go if they don't end up with a guy like Rasmus, who at least has that ability, has that upside in him.
And that kind of leads into my next question. Are they willing, if it comes to it, maybe to sit on some payroll flexibility and be able to say in July, if somebody comes open, hey, you know what, we've got some money to spend and can bring somebody on at that point?
I think that's exactly what they'd be willing to do. And not even all the way as far back as July, but spring training. How many times do you see, you know, teams who end up having maybe all of their position players that they didn't think were going to be healthy are all healthy? And they've got too many guys. There are a lot of moves that get made in spring training that end up paying dividends. And I think if the Orioles go into camp with that money, with holes to fill still, they made a lot of late moves last year. I mean, Ubaldo Jimenez, Nelson Cruz, none of those moves were made until they were already down in spring training for a week or two. So there's no real rush. Dan Duquette likes to say that they're upgrading the team all year. So they're not just going to go out and sign a guy because it's going to appease the fans. They're not afraid of a bad winter. They had a bad winter last year, and they were able to go to the ALCS. So they're going to make those moves. They're going to upgrade the club, but they're not going to force anything.
Is there anything to report, or this may be something we'll know next week, but is there anything to report as Matt Wieters and Manny Machado continue in their progress trying to get ready for spring training?
Nothing new. You know, they continue to be kind of cautiously optimistic that both guys will be available to them. It's not at opening day, and shortly after opening day. And, you know, the word was that Wieters wouldn't be available for opening day, which is something Buck told us at the winter meetings. And Scott Boras, his agent, said that that wasn't true. He's going to be ready. He, right now, is in his home in Atlanta. He's rehabbing. He won't be at the team's minicamp next week. Manny Machado will. So there should be a little bit more of an update on him. But I think both guys are pushing to be ready mid-April. At the latest. I mean, when you look at how far back their surgeries are, Machado had the benefit this time around of getting that extra month, getting it done in August rather than waiting until the end of the year. And then Matt Wieters, it was early June. So coming back from Tommy John as a catcher, obviously quicker than if he was a pitcher. So they're looking at having both those guys ready early. And those are key additions that I don't think anyone's really thinking about. But if they're coming back and they're coming back healthy, this is automatically a better club than it was last season.
Do they feel like they already basically have their plan Bs in place for both of those guys if either one of them is behind schedule, right? I mean, essentially, it's the plan Bs they used last season?
To some extent. Nick Hundley, they don't have. He signed that two-year deal with the Rockies, became a free agent. They have Caleb Joseph. They picked up Ryan LaVarnway on waivers. He's another guy they like. They could add another catcher between now and spring training simply to audition for that role to get them through. Third base. They could go a number of ways. Steve Pierce, who I mentioned before, they want to see get some reps at third base if possible. Ryan Flaherty is a guy that they could rotate around the infield as well, so they could have him there for Manny Machado. Chris Davis is another guy who has some experience. You could put him at third base. You could put Steve Pierce at first in that scenario if Manny's not ready. So they do have those plans in place, as you mentioned, but it wouldn't surprise me if they added another catcher just in case for camp.
With Davis, is there a decent chance he sees some reps at third in the spring just to kind of make sure that he's fresh if that has to happen again?
I think so. Buck likes to switch guys up in spring training to make sure that they're prepared for everything. And when you factor in the fact that Steve Pierce had such a good year, if they do get another outfielder, you want Steve Pierce to get some time at first base or DH or whatever it may be. And if that means moving Chris Davis over to third, you're going to do it. You've got to get Chris Davis right this season. I think that's a huge part of the year. But you also don't want to bury a guy like Steve Pierce coming off of a career year. So, yes, I think you do take Davis's versatility, and you let him take some reps over there at third base.
All right. Well, Brittany Giroli, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras. Talking New York Yankees with MLB.com's Yankees beat reporter Brian Hoke. Brian, as is typical for the last, I don't know, several decades, the Yankees steadfastly refuse to give the people who cover them any time to breathe. They remain busy even into January, most recently all but finalizing a deal with Stephen Drew. What was it that they saw in Drew or didn't see on their own roster maybe that makes them feel that Drew is a good option to be apparently their starting second baseman next season?
I think it's a few things. I think they looked at what Drew did last year, and they give him a pass on that. Basically, he had an interrupted year where he didn't go to spring training. He didn't even play in a big league game until June. He never seemed to be right, really. He never seemed to get his timing down. He was late on a lot of fastballs. He couldn't really get around. The defense was okay. But I think that they believe that Stephen Drew last year was not the real Stephen Drew. They want to go more off what he was in 2013 and when he was the starting shortstop for a team that won the World Series in Boston. So I think that combined with the fact his asking price went down at $5 million, that's a lot less than the 8 or 9 we'd heard earlier in the winter for Drew. And, you know, they had Rob Refsnyder and Jose Perella. They had internal candidates that they could have gone to spring training with. But I think for $5 million, which is the same amount they gave to Chris Capuano to round out the back end of the rotation, at that price, Drew's a guy who can come in, he can hold down second base. Maybe you can play him at shortstop if something happens to D.D. Gregorius. I suppose you could play third base. But he gives them options and more depth where they don't have to go in counting on a couple of kids who haven't really done in the big leagues yet.
I was going to ask about that. Is he, to any extent, an insurance policy on Gregorius, who a year ago was a very good player, but had a little bit of a rough 2014?
I think he absolutely is. You know, the Yankees are going for Gregorius. They like his athleticism. They think he's going to hit enough in the big leagues. But if it doesn't happen, if it doesn't work out for some reason, I mean, injuries can always happen. Drew is a guy who has done it at a high level. He's been a major league shortstop, as I said, on a team that's won a World Series. I think you can plug Stephen Drew in and not have any questions defensively. And as I said, the Yankees believe the bat is better than he showed last year. So when all that comes to it, I think that when you look up the middle and you have Gregorius and Stephen Drew, you can see a major defensive upgrade for sure over last year where they had Derek Jeter and Brian Roberts to start the year.
And this follows what I thought was a really fascinating move and really kind of makes it make a little more sense. The move they made with the Marlins, bringing in Nate Eovaldi and Garrett Jones, moving Martin Prado, that was a really interesting move, I thought. Do you think it kind of makes a little more sense or is a little more understandable now that they bring in Drew? It's kind of a package of moves in a sense?
Yeah, I think so, because I questioned moving Prado. I thought Prado played second base terrifically. He was versatile. Obviously was affordable under what they needed. I thought Prado was a good fit on this roster, but clearly the Yankees went in another direction. They believe Eovaldi is a high-caliber talent. They like his big arm. Obviously, his fastball velocity is terrific. Control has been pretty good. He gave up a lot of hits last year. He is a work in progress. They're going to have Larry Rothschild work on a few things with him and try and iron him out. But even with him not being a finished product, you're looking at a guy who's 25. He's in the prime of his career. You would think got a bright future ahead of him under team control. I think with all those things combined, you look at that and I think you say that's probably worth a gamble.
Yeah, he seems like the kind of guy who's a great example of the difference between control and command. What do you think really is the upside with a guy like that? I mean, do they think this is a guy who maybe could become a two-starter on a good team, or are they just happy if he's a pretty good back-of-the-rotation, durable guy?
Yeah, I think if he turns into a two, that's fantastic, but I think even if you know that he's going to be a three or a four and a solid, dependable guy who's going to get the ball 30 to 32 times a year, I think he's close to 200 innings this past year. I think you sign up for that in a second. You bet on the stuff. You bet that he's going to be able to figure out a way to get his strikeout numbers up, his hit totals down. The Yankees like the fact that his walk ratio is low, and they think their defense as we said before with the middle infield, some of those balls that were hits last year for Miami, they think that the Yankee defense and Chase Headley at third base is above average. Mark Teixeira is above average at first base. They think a lot of those hits are going to turn into outs.
Is there now, with Eovaldi in, with Capuano, is there enough starting pitching depth right now, or do they still need maybe one more guy to give them a little certainty as far as innings and depth?
I don't think it would hurt. Everybody wants to say, when are the Yankees going to go get Max Scherzer, and they've kind of steered clear of that, but I want to leave the door open just a smidge, because as you remember with Mark Teixeira in 09, they were out until they weren't anymore. But even if that doesn't happen, I think you saw last year the Yankees used 13 different starting pitchers. I mean, they lost 4 out of the 5 guys in their opening day rotation. So they are no strangers to the idea that they need depth. They're going to have Adam Warren come into spring training as a potential starter. He's a guy they could look at. They have Esmiel Rogers, who started, and they have a batch of guys who probably will begin the year in AAA. I'm thinking of Chase Whitley as one, but could also do it. So they have choices, but I don't think it would hurt to bring in another guy, no.
And then there's the other part of that move they made with the Marlins, which is Garrett Jones, who, again, is a really interesting pickup. He's an interesting pickup in and of himself, because he's a guy who's shown some real ability to hit the ball out of the park. But it also seems like it seems like maybe that says something about Alex Rodriguez. I mean, they're kind of running out of places to play Rodriguez. If he's not going to play third base, if he's not going to play much first, if Teixeira is healthy, and if Jones is going to take some of the remaining at-bats at DH, where does that leave A-Rod?
I think what you're seeing is the Yankees are preparing for the chance that Alex isn't able to provide anything. And I think they don't know what to expect from him. He's coming off a year where he didn't play at all. He's played very little in the last 2 years. I think you have to prepare for the chance that he's not able to give you anything. And then whatever you do squeeze out of him becomes a bonus. So I think that if you have Garrett Jones, that big left-handed bat in Yankee Stadium, and he's your DH against right-handed pitching, and then Alex is the DH against lefties, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. I think that would be the absolute minimum you'd want to hope from if you're having Rodriguez on the roster. But it could wind up being something more than that. It could be that A-Rod is the DH against everybody. It could be that A-Rod is moving around well enough that you feel okay putting him in as a backup third baseman. So I think it could be anything under the sun at this point. You're not going to know until you get A-Rod on the field against big league pitching in spring training and start seeing how the bat speed is, how his reaction time is, how he's moving in the field. These are all questions, you know, and I know he's starting to swing the bat a little bit. He's in the batting cage. He's working out on a high school field, but there's a big jump between that and being in Yankee Stadium. So I think as of this moment, they have to prepare as though they're going to get nothing out of A-Rod, and maybe 3 months down the line, the situation's a lot brighter.
With the exception of maybe some pitching depth, do you think basically if you look at a depth chart now, you see more or less what the Yankees roster looks like when spring training opens?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, barring a major acquisition, I think that they might add a couple pieces here or there, but I think for the most part, all of the major pieces are in place. Obviously, you'd love to see one more big arm in that rotation, I think. I think that Scott Boras was talking at the winter meetings about how historically the Yankees have needed to get 600 innings out of the top three starters in the rotation. And you look at Masahiro Tanaka and CeCe Sabathia and Michael Pineda, and I think to say you're going to absolutely get 600 innings out of those guys, you have to question that. Obviously, Boras has his own party he's trying to pump up. He obviously wants the Yankees to go after Scherzer. But I think the point is valid in that you can't have a pennant-winning season, a world championship season, where you're plugging in 13 different starting pitches. It's just not going to work. They were very lucky to get to 84 wins. It was a lot of work last year to finish second place. But if you really want to say the Yankees are going to win the World Series next year, I think they do need one more piece.
All right. Well, Brian Hoke, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras. Talking Toronto Blue Jays with MLB.com's Blue Jays beat reporter, Gregor Chisholm. Gregor, it's still been a fairly quiet winter for the most part for the Blue Jays. They made a couple moves early, but I think maybe there was some expectation that there might be some more stuff coming after the big trade early in the winter. Do you anticipate that they're essentially done at this point, or do you still think there are some pieces to be added to this club as we get between now and the beginning of spring training?
I think they're close to being done, but I think there's still some minor tinkering that's going to have to go on between now and the start of spring training. I don't think any big names are going to arrive, like I think a lot of fans were hoping for after the big acquisitions earlier this year, late last year with Donaldson and Martin and Michael Saunders. I think what you're going to see now is not necessarily big pieces coming in to fix the bullpen, but they still need a couple of arms to come in and potentially be in a middle relief role, compete for the closer's job. And then they also need to do something with adding some depth at second base and in the outfield as well. So there's some minor depth options, but the big priority between now and the start of spring training has to be the bullpen, because they simply don't have enough options down there right now, and they're going to need more options to really be strongly considered in the American League East.
Yeah, I obviously misspoke a bit. It has not been a quiet off season, but it's been a quiet last month or so as everybody else has gone wild. You mentioned second base and the outfield. Looking at the depth chart, you've got not a lot of experience at the top of that depth chart at both second base and in center. Do you anticipate that they go to camp with Pompey and with Goins getting those jobs, or do you anticipate that the starters at those jobs may still not be in the organization yet?
I think for the most part, the starters are going to be the guys that are already there, and I think Goins will have the inside track going into spring training. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Devin Travis really pushes him, though. I think, you know, he's the type of prospect that is, you know, probably ideally could use at least a couple more months in the minor leagues to get more seasoning. But if he comes in and has a hot camp, that position is very much up for grabs, because simply put, I mean, Ryan Goins and Meister Sturrus last year weren't able to get the job done. An injury had a big thing to do with the Sturrus' bad year, but he's more of a guy who's suited to a backup role. And, you know, the Blue Jays really do like the defense they got from Goins, but the fact is he hasn't hit enough at the major league level to be considered a viable option on a regular basis. So I think if Travis comes in, plays well early, he can really force himself into that conversation. And even if he doesn't make the team on day one, I think you're looking at a guy who, you know, maybe only needs, you know, 1 month, maybe 2 months at the most down in the minors. They're going to do everything they can to get him up. The outfield is probably a little bit different. I think that job definitely is Pompey's for the foreseeable future. It's really his job to lose at this point. What I think they need to do is I think they need to get probably a veteran fourth outfielder type. You know, there's been rumors over the last couple of days that the Blue Jays were talking a little bit to Ichiro, and I mean, he's someone who would have been a good fit in that role. He's kind of an ideal guy who could come in as a fourth guy, veteran guy, just give a little bit more depth at all three spots.
Travis is an interesting guy for a lot of reasons, but one of the reasons he stands out to me is he would seem to go along with the new acquisitions in Saunders and Martin as guys who maybe give a little different look to how this offense operates. It was such a hit it out of the park or not a lot else, and it seems like not just speed, but it seems like they are adding guys with some on-base skills maybe to kind of diversify that lineup. Has that been by design?
Yeah, I think so, and I think that's something that they really needed to do. I mean, the lineup last year was really it was so hot or cold. There was really no middle ground. It was, you know, the ball was either leaving the park or it wasn't. When the ball was going out, the Blue Jays often found ways to win. When it wasn't, they often couldn't do that. You know, they do have to replace a guy who was one of the better hitters in that area as well. And with Melky Cabrera, he was a guy who could help generate some offense without the ball leaving the yard. So they had to replace him first and foremost. And then overall, you wanted some of that, you know, versatility and depth throughout the lineup. So I think that's something that really had to be addressed this year. I don't know if it was addressed quite as much as they really, really wanted to. I think if you had very solid options at second or center field, it would probably be a little bit more ideal. But they're going to have to get by with those positions for now. And I think they hope that you know, long term, especially, but perhaps even short term as well, that Devin Travis could fit into that role and just kind of help lengthen out that lineup with guys who have the ability to hit the gaps and make some things happen.
What's the latest with Deonner Navarro? It seems like the message has been a little different at different times. Got to trade him. Maybe don't have to trade him. Do you anticipate he comes to camp with the Blue Jays and then following that? Breaks camp with them?
I think that he's still going to get traded, but, you know, the thing is right now, I think that the Blue Jays know that they could trade him, you know, within an hour if they really wanted to, but they're not going to get much in return, and that's something that Anthopoulos wants to change. If they wanted to dump his salary, if they needed to dump his salary, open up $5 million in additional payroll to make another type of move, I think they know that they can do that because there are teams out there that have some interest in the ball. But the teams that do have interest, it doesn't seem like they're prepared to give up much in return. So Anthopoulos has been adamant throughout this entire process that he's not going to just give Navarro away because he thinks there's a lot of value there. So if a fair offer doesn't present itself, then, yeah, I do think there's a chance that Anthopoulos just stands pat with this entire thing and sends Navarro, brings him into camp again, and then he becomes your, obviously the backup catcher to Martin, but then there is some ability to get some at-bats at DH as well. So his playing time wouldn't be completely limited. I think overall he actually helps make the team quite a bit better. I mean, having that depth behind the plate and having another option at DH is something this team could use. But at the same time, if he's a guy that you can use to help get that missing bullpen piece, I think that's where the priority is, and if a team ends up offering up a guy who could be used in the seventh or eighth inning, I think that's a move that you'll see the Blue Jays make.
And then the one thing that you mentioned and that continues to be seemingly the one obvious thing is the bullpen. What do you still anticipate them to do? Is it just a matter of bringing in more depth, or is there still maybe some likelihood that they do something, I don't know if bigger is the term, but somebody on a guaranteed, you know, maybe multi-year deal, somebody who might pitch at the back of the bullpen?
Yeah, I don't anticipate anyone coming in and getting a multi-year deal at this point. The one big move that I still wouldn't rule out for the Jays, and it's something they said that they don't really want to do, but I could still see Aaron Sanchez going back into the bullpen. I mean, right now he seems like he's their fifth starter. But if the Blue Jays aren't able to add a legitimate arm or two to the bullpen, they desperately need someone down there, and they're probably going to turn to Sanchez because he excelled in that role last year. And then you can have guys like Daniel Norris and Estrada compete for the fifth spot in the rotation. That's where they do have a little bit of depth. I think for the long-term future of Sanchez, it makes an awful lot of sense to get him into the rotation on day one, build up that endurance and build up his arm strength so that he doesn't set back for a couple years. If he goes to the bullpen, it's going to take him a little while to get stretched back out. That would even impact his innings the following year. But he's the type of power arm that the Blue Jays need in the ninth inning role. So if they are unable to get it elsewhere, they're probably going to have to look internally, no matter how many people in that organization would like to see him as a starter.
Rigor Chisholm, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras. Talking Tampa Bay Rays with MLB.com's Rays beat reporter, Bill Chastain. So, Bill, we haven't talked in a while, and so I'm going to kick us off with something that kind of seems like ancient history, given all that's gone on all over baseball this winter. But by far the biggest player transaction move that this club has made this offseason is dealing Will Myers in a mega deal. I think 11 players went one way or another in a very big deal. What do you think moving Myers says about sort of overall direction and strategy of the franchise as far as how they balance 2015 with how they balance the years to come?
Well, as they always say, they want to make moves with an eye on the present and an eye on the future. I don't think in any way does it indicate that they are giving up on this season. In fact, I think they feel like they're very competitive with what they've done. They like Steven Souza, who they got from the Nationals, and then they also like the catcher they got from the Padres, Rene Rivera. And Ryan Hannigan, the guy they got last year to catch for him, I think they were looking for more out of him. It didn't turn out. He's been injured for 2 years in a row. So I think they unloaded a little bit of salary there. I also like this kid. They seem to like him, too. The right-hander, I'm a little intrigued by the Padres, Bert Schmidt. It sounds pretty close to Major League ready. So, I just think it's a question of taste. I don't think it was whether or not you were just giving up on Myers or whatnot. I think they liked what they saw in these other guys, and they went for it.
You mentioned Rivera, and he is actually coming off a rather nice year, but I think you've written he seems to be somebody that ideally you might prefer to use as a backup catcher. He may have the ability. He might be perfectly good as an everyday guy, but I think ideally maybe he's best suited as a backup guy. Does that mean that they are still currently searching for an everyday catcher?
Of course, that wouldn't surprise me a bit. I know the hottest guy they got in the minors is a guy named Justin O'Connor, and he will play AAA this year, and so I don't really think he's ready for the majors yet. They also like Kurt Casale, who played a lot last year, but right now I think Rivera is kind of earmarked to be their starting guy, even though if you take away last year, I would certainly agree he was earmarked to be a backup. You know, so who knows, maybe the lights came on offensively. I do know he's supposed to be really good calling the games and framing pitches and the whole bit, so in talking to some of the pitchers, they're pretty excited about his acquisition.
And then the other sort of biggest player news for this club more recently is there are these reports that something is imminent with Esdrubal Cabrera, which seems like a kind of an odd fit, though he's been a pretty good player in the past. Where does Cabrera fit in with the 2015 Rays, assuming this deal gets done?
Well, right now you would just have to say it's a total depth situation. You know, you would have your middle guys would be Zobrist, Escobar, and Cabrera. If you're kind of looking ahead, you got to believe that they're probably looking to trade Zobrist. And he makes the most sense. He'd probably be the hardest one to trade as far as, you know, for the fans, because he's extremely popular. He's in the last year of his contract. He has a $7.5 million deal this year. But if they can get some guys back for this guy, I think it makes a lot of sense. Now, Cabrera, you know, it's kind of funny. I haven't seen him play a lot over the years. I remember him when he played shortstop for the Indians, and I thought he was a magician out there as a fielder, and apparently his fielding has gone down a little bit, so that probably makes him play out better as a second baseman, which he did last year with the Nationals. So I think it's a strong acquisition either way, whether you keep Zobrist or not, but I do think there's a good chance Zobrist could get traded before spring training.
We've talked extensively about Zobrist's future and when they might deal him and what they might get back for him. I think one thing we've never actually talked about, and I find myself wondering, is it really a done deal that they don't find a way to re-up him beyond this year? Is it anywhere in the picture that rather than dealing him or letting him walk as a free agent, that they might be able to work something out to keep him around beyond this year?
Based on what they've done historically, I would say no. Because probably the one thing that they are is that they're true to their model. And I think once they become where they get too sentimental about one player and they kind of break from their model, I think that's where they're going to get in trouble. Right now they go with young pitching, young players, players they can control salary-wise, and that fits them, and it's worked well for them ever since, you know, this regime took over. So I'd be very surprised if he got an extension, despite how popular and what a great person and player he is.
So if they have, in fact, at least put themselves in a position where they're able to make that kind of move, and I'm not saying that bringing in Cabrera means it's a done deal, but it at least sort of allows them to cushion the blow. If this is getting maybe closer or becoming more viable, what do you think the desired return is? Do you think the desired return is something that again, is playable in 2015, or this, if they were to move Zobrist, would it be something where they would be, again, maybe looking more down the road?
Well, I don't think they're in a position where they have to find something for 2015. You look at the depth in the outfield, and then you also look at their infield. Their infield is set. So, you know, if there's a really nice player that comes and maybe they put somebody else in the deal with them, maybe an outfielder, maybe a David DeJesus, you might see somebody who would contribute now, but I would guess more of the top of the line prospect or two that they could use to add to their minor league depth.
Have you seen? And I know it's and by and large it's the same people, so I understand it's not like there was a massive turnover in the front office. But have you seen even subtly philosophical differences in how this front office operates? In the absence of Andrew Friedman and even in the absence of Joe Maddon, who I realize wasn't in the front office but clearly had a voice in how things were done, have you seen even subtle differences in any of their philosophy, any of the way they approach player acquisition or roster construction or anything like that?
You know, I really haven't. I think Matt Silverman, it was the perfect guy to take over as the for Friedman. And of course, he came in with him, you know, when they came in all those years ago. Very smart guy. I think he's been really bold this offseason. I mean, if you talk to a lot of Rays fans, they're saying, oh, they're getting rid of everybody. But when you kind of peel away the onion, you look at what's left, and it's not bad, and particularly when you get to the starting pitching, you know, led by Alex Cobb at the front end. Starting pitching, you know, is what stirs the drink, and they have a lot of it. So I think right now probably the biggest kink in their armor going into the season will be, you know, the fact that McGee will be on the disabled list to start it. But getting back to Silverman, I just think it's been a flawless thing so far, and they're really excited about Kevin Cash coming in at manager. So, maybe a little makeover, maybe a little kick in the pants is good, you know, as they say about change sometimes.
What is your expectation from Cash, either tactically? I know that's really hard to know, but even personality-wise, as far as what kind of culture or what kind of vibe he wants to have in the clubhouse?
Well, of course, he was influenced greatly by Tito Francona. Sorry about that. I want to say Tito Landrum. I think he'll keep it loose. I think the big thing he likes to talk about is communication. And everybody talks about how well he communicates. You know, he doesn't seem to have much of an ego. You know, he laughs a lot about his prowess as a major league hitter. So I think it's going to be, you know, interesting to see what he does. And I think he's going to be popular here. You know, he's a homegrown kid. Some of the people remember him when he was here. So, I think they're hoping this guy will be with them for some time.
And, you know, obviously it's a different situation with that club. I mean, I think everybody understands that the expectations, while they're always high, that sometimes things are going to be a challenge. But do you think that the fact that, as you note, he's a hometown guy, do you think that buys him any extra honeymoon or any extra leeway with the fan base if there are some growing pains early?
You know, I'm not really sure if it would, because even though he is a hometown guy, and I think people will like that, he wasn't one of the really visible guys from Tampa. You know, I mean, it wasn't like Fred McGriff or Wade Boggs coming in or Tino Martinez. So, I mean, people know he's from Tampa, but it's not like they are, you know, have followed his career extensively. So I think, you know, he's pretty much like another manager coming in, other than, they will give him a little bit for being a hometown guy, but he's not exactly a hometown hero, you know?
Gotcha. And one last thing, what still has to get done? What's the shopping list for this club between now and when camp opens in about 6 weeks?
Well, I think they need to do something in the outfield, whether it's, you know, trading a David DeJesus, although David DeJesus still would fit in very nicely as a leadoff guy against right-handed pitching. I'm thinking Zobrist is really the guy that, you know, is going to be moved to kind of clear up some of the things that are left. But other than that, you know, maybe they'll sign a minor league, an experienced reliever to a minor league deal with an invite to camp. But I don't really see a lot big coming, but I would anticipate, I think there's a good chance Zobrist could go.
All right. Well, Bill Chastain, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras. Talking Boston Red Sox with MLB.com's Red Sox beat reporter, Ian Brown. Ian, it's been a pretty memorable week for anybody who cares about the Red Sox, or frankly even baseball, with the induction of Pedro Martinez. There's a lot we could talk about with Pedro, but I would like to start with, just for you, as somebody who's been around that organization for a long time, is there one moment with Pedro Martinez that stands out?
You know, it's hard to really put one, but if I had to think of one, it would probably be the night in Cleveland in 1999, Game 5, winner take all. Nobody even thought he was going to be able to pitch that night. He didn't start. He had a shoulder/back issue. Came out of the bullpen. He was a very powerful Cleveland Indians team at that time, in a game that was just a slugfest, and threw 6 no-hit innings out of the bullpen and just shut up everyone at Jacobs Field. And it was just his fastball was only about 88, 89 miles an hour that night, and it was just, it was like the Indians were afraid just by the mystique of Pedro and just who he was at that time. So that was probably the one thing, that was probably the one game that jumps out the most for me.
In your time in the game, and the answer to this for me is no, but I would be curious for you, Is there anybody that you've seen pitch or play where it was just such an event that day?
Yeah, no, not in his, you know, you're talking like 1998 through like 2000, till he got hurt in the middle of 2001. You know, he was just so on top of his game that he could just do anything he wanted out there. He was just in complete control. And, you know, at the time I thought it was like watching Michael Jordan as a baseball player every fifth day. He was just that good and that far above, you know, everybody else. So I would say, no, I've never seen anybody quite like that when he was at his very best. Now, his very best didn't last, you know, as long as some other guys, but when he was at his best, you know, I don't think you can find anybody who was that dominant.
Right. I mean, that really is, I mean, I think Jordan's, in some ways, is not a parallel, but in that regard is a parallel, somebody you would just buy a ticket to see. I mean, I lived in Seattle for some of Randy Johnson's peak, and he obviously had the better career total in total value. But even Randy, I don't think, ever had that, like, yeah, man, I'm going to see Randy pitch the way that it was, you're going to see Pedro pitch.
Yeah, no, it was a real event, and, you know, Fenway Park would be filled with the Dominican flag, you know, Dominican flags all over the place. The guys would have, you know, the K cards on the back of the bleachers, and just, you know, the seats were full. But back in those days, people would go to the concession stand when the Red Sox were hitting because they didn't want to miss a single pitch that Pedro threw. And he just really, you know, took that franchise to another level when he got there in 98. The Red Sox had gone through a little bit of a downturn in 97 after Roger Clemens left, and the team had sort of an uncertain future. He just brought so much excitement, and that's what, you know, people will never forget.
It's funny to think back, and I mean, I think people were very excited to acquire him at the time, but if I remember correctly, there were some very real worries about what they gave up in that trade. I mean, is that accurate, that to some extent there was some element of, wow, this guy's really good, but holy cow, that's a lot to give up?
No, I don't think so, Matthew. I think because of the age Pedro was at the time, people were really just so excited because they had seen a Red Sox team the year before that didn't have an ace. You know, I think they had, like, you know, Steve Avery or Tom Gordon or someone like that pitch opening day, and they were spoiled, you know, with Roger Clemens, who was kind of another must-see performer for a long time. Having somebody like that, a standout performer. So to get Pedro at that time, after what he had done in 97 in Montreal, I think, people were so excited. Did they know that he was going to become quite what he became? Probably not. But I think that, you know, they did give up two good prospects, but I think everyone didn't have a problem with the trade at the time.
Just on a day-to-day basis, what was it like for you covering him?
It was very interesting. There was never a dull moment with Pedro. You know, he could be very bubbly at times. He could be prickly at times. He would get, get really hyper when he wasn't pitching, but there's also, you know, he'd get set off by, you know, you would hear something said about him in the media that he didn't like, or on a talk show or something, and he'd kind of shut it down and get angry. That whole chip on his shoulder kind of helped fuel his whole career. So he was really quite an interesting character, and just, you know, you never quite knew what you were going to get, but, you know, at his best, and when he was happy, there was nobody more fun to be around than Pedro Martinez, because he you just never knew what he was going to say or what he was going to do.
I could probably bug you with this for the entirety of our time here, but I also know that you've done a good bit of talking, and I know there's a season coming up. So do you think that the 2015 Red Sox roster is pretty much set at this point, or do you think there's still significant moves to be made with this club?
Yeah, no, I don't know about significant. I think they're going to make another tweak or two to the bullpen. They did, you know, re-sign Craig Breslow, but I think that that bullpen still lacks another lefty, and I think they're going to try and keep looking and see if they can find someone. If not, maybe another good righty who almost has reverse splits and will be tough on lefties. I just think that bullpen needs one more guy. The rotation, hey, it would be great to have a true ace, but you know, they haven't been able to get one to this point, and I just don't know if the market is going to allow it. I think they might be willing to go into the season with what they have, and I think this pitching rotation can compete. But I think that if you want to win the World Series by July, you'll see Ben Sherrington go out there and get a frontline pitcher.
Even putting aside maybe an ace, and obviously that would be a real plus, I look at those candidates, and I only see two guys that I'm really confident are going to go north of 190 innings or so in Porcello and Miley. I mean, I know Masterson's done it some, but to me, it seems like as much as frontline quality, it seems like there's still some or should be some worry about innings. Do you see them, even if they can't get a frontline guy, maybe looking for some kind of durable three type to just give them more dependable innings?
Yeah, I think they're still looking out there. You know, they sure hope that Clay Buchholz can finally put together a 200-inning season. You know, Joe Kelly has had sort of some similar durability issues in his career. They're hopeful that those guys could give them 200 innings. But, yeah, they have to cover their bases. They have to stay on the hunt for depth. And, look, they feel good about their stable of young talent, too. So I think they feel that if one of these guys goes down, they have some young pitchers who might be ready to plug in there, be it Matt Barnes, be it Brandon Workman, be it Henry Owens, one of those guys. So I think that they're looking at the market and seeing what's out there. So you know, it's just they haven't been able to find anything yet, and it's just that the price of quality pitching is expensive right now, and they just haven't been able to find the right deal.
And with that said, I mean, there still are two and three, depending on how you feel about James Shields, really desirable starting pitchers presumably available. Max Scherzer in free agency, Cole Hamels, I don't know that the Phillies are desperate, but I think it's clear that the right package gets him. What do you think is their level of seriousness about one of those kinds of guys at this point?
Yeah, I would just almost rule out, you know, you hate to rule out something entirely, but I would rule out pretty strongly Max Scherzer because, you know, the Red Sox showed that they had a limit on what they were willing to spend there with John Lester. They went as high as $135 million. I mean, you figure it's going to take another $30 million at least to get Max Scherzer. And so all of a sudden, are they going to spend that money on Max Scherzer that they didn't spend on John Lester? I'm very skeptical of that. Shields, you know, we'll see what the price tag ends up being. I wouldn't rule that out. Hamels, you know, they've had a number of talks already with the Phillies, and they haven't been able to find common ground, but you know, that would be a great scenario, and that would be almost like a little bit of a cheaper version of John Lester. We'd just have to see if he could handle you know, pitching in the American League. And you know, you also look at Jordan Zimmerman, who might be available at some point in the trade. So yeah, I think Charrington is still exploring and still look, they don't play till April. I think everybody wants to, you know, envision what this roster is going to be right now here in early January. But Charrington, I think, is being patient and seeing if a deal comes to him that makes sense. If he can get one before that season starts on April 5th, I think that he'll make one.
In addition to potential additions, apologies for the double there, it also seems like there's a real opportunity or maybe even a necessity for a subtraction. This club still seems to me has more outfielders than it can carry on its roster. Do you anticipate seeing somebody moved, even just to clear roster space, if not to add some talent to the system or maybe acquire something beyond that?
Yeah, Matthew, I really don't think that Alan Craig is going to be on this team come opening day. I think that he might come to spring training because I think a lot of other teams want to see if he's swinging the bat a little better and a little healthier than he was last year. But to me, he doesn't fit so well on this team right now, just when you look at all they have in the outfield. And Shane Victorino, I think that, you know, first of all, his salary makes him very hard to trade. Second of all, you're counting on some young guys in the outfield, and Victorino could be a nice piece to at least complement against a lot of lefties, still very good defensively. So I think that they like him. So I really think that Craig is going to be the guy who you see moved at some point just to clear out some space.
All right. Well, Ian Brown, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras, and thanks, everybody, for listening.